Hey, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media about their work and process. We're powered by digital media. This week, we got a little bit something different. The roundtable returns. John O'Rand of the Sports Business Journal, their fine media reporter, Sports Business Daily as well, and Jimmy Traina of The Comeback and Awful Announcing, also my former Sports Illustrated colleague. We cover a lot of topics in this roundtable, including where we see the NFL ratings headed now that the election is over.
Before the election, I thought that the NFL's ratings decline was totally due to the election. And I think post-election, I still stand by that.
Other topics include where we see the UFC's rights heading come 2018. John O'Rand just had a big story about the UFC looking for a gigantic increase in its rights deal. And he discusses where he thinks the UFC will ultimately land.
So my guess is it's going to go back to Fox, but not quite at 450 million.
All that's coming up on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm Richard Deitch. My producer is Lou Pellegrino. And let's head to the roundtable. This episode of the SI Media Podcast with Richard Deitch is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Guys, whatever you're wearing right now, Mack Weldon is better. Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. Mack Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. And Mack Weldon wants you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they will still refund you, no questions asked. And Mack Weldon, these aren't just comfortable clothes. Mack Weldon looks good, and it performs well, too. It's good for everyday life, good for working out, good for work, good for going out on dates. All their products are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. How do you get Mack Weldon? You go to MackWeldon.com, that's MackWeldon.com, and get 20% off using promo code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A. It's easy shopping, great customer service, good-looking, super comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, and hoodies. That's MackWeldon.com, and you get 20% off using the promo code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A. That's MackWeldon.com, 20% off using promo code MEDIA. All right, as promised, the return of the media panel, John O'Rand of the Sports Business Daily, right now in Los Angeles, California, I believe, and Jimmy Traina of Awful Announcing and The Comeback somewhere on the eastern shores of Long Island. Gentlemen, welcome back to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
We're going to keep doing this till one of us gets fired, Rich.
It'll probably be me or Jimmy. Jimmy, how are you today? Jimmy?
I didn't want to step on John's toes, but thank you for having me again.
Jimmy, it's a podcast. Like, no pauses here. Let's go. Let's just quick. Speed. Metabolism.
Relax. It's too early in the podcast for, like, you know, I'm going to be the tough guy and, you know, take command.
All right. Let's start with the NFL. There's been so much, and we talked about this the last time we did a podcast about the NFL's declining ratings. John, interestingly enough, as we tape this on Wednesday, November 30th, ESPN saw its first year-over-year increase for Monday Night Football with the Packers-Eagles game. They drew an 8-9 overnight that was up from, you know, the sort of same comparative window last year from a 7-4. We saw great Thanksgiving Day ratings, including the Redskins-Cowboys game, 35 million, huge number. Vikings-Lions did 27.6 million viewers on CBS, their best game by far. So, John, let's start with you. There are, depending on how you want to play with the numbers, there are signs that the NFL has had a bit of an uptick post-election, but there are, you can also make the argument from some Sunday afternoon windows that the NFL is still struggling, and certainly the primetime windows, I should say, the NFL is still struggling with ratings this year. How have you seen the last couple weeks?
Well, I before the election, I thought that the NFL's ratings decline was totally due to the election and the news networks getting so many viewers. I thought that that accounted for probably 95% of the decline in NFL ratings. And I think post-election, I still stand by that. In fact, our guy, Mulvihill, who, by the way, has become quite a proficient tweeter recently.
That's
he's
right.
He's really getting up there.
Mike Mulvihill, Fox Sports, right?
He had a tweet. He's a Fox Sports researcher. He had a tweet yesterday saying in weeks 1 to 9 pre-election, all NFL in-game overnight ratings were down 14%. in weeks 10 to 12 post-election, all NFL in-game overnight ratings were down 3%. I mean, so that's you can take a look at like the single games, like the Cowboys Redskins, you know, which is a good matchup, or Cowboys Steelers, like another sort of good matchup. So you're going to get good ratings. But really, the oxygen that that Trump was sort of sucking out of the room from the whole election season, it's starting to dissipate, and the numbers are starting to sort of come back to normal.
Jimmy, you know, you're not as much I know as a ratings wonk as John is, obviously, given where John works, but. John wrote something that I thought was interesting, Jimmy, that I'll have you comment on in the context of this. And John thought that the ratings may not come back all the way with a Trump victory because the cable news networks, obviously, not surprisingly, will have far more to cover pre-inauguration day with Trump. He's sort of, you know, or his early morning tweets or something else he says. There's just clearly more of a news production, or Donald Trump produces more news as a president-elect than I think Hillary Clinton does. So John's argument, which is an interesting one to me, was that maybe the ratings don't come back because so many of those people who stuck with cable news during the primetime windows for the NFL are still going to be on cable news. How do you see the NFL ratings, Jimmy, especially in relation to John's sort of thesis about Trump sucking up more oxygen as a winner versus Clinton?
I think it's a very interesting point by John, because I think I had said this on Twitter recently that for CNN and MSNBC, I thought a Trump victory would help them not as much as a Hillary Clinton victory would help Fox. But I never really thought about it in terms of the NFL. So it's an interesting theory that I think makes sense. I said on the last podcast we did, I thought the election was a major reason for the NFL ratings decline, but I also thought, unlike John, who thinks it's all election, I thought the quality of play, the refs, the lack of superstars at quarterback were a factor. So I still think that's in play, but I do think the ratings now will go up each week because now you have the playoff picture becoming clearer. You have teams now that where the games mean something, the matchups are a little better. One thing that was interesting that happened this week was we had such good games on Thanksgiving with the matchups that the Sunday afternoon slate was terrible. So there is something there with the NFL spreading these games around a little bit too much. But I think now where, you know, playoff seeding and playoff berths are at stake, the election's over, even with Trump winning and still being a magnet for people on cable news, I do think you'll see them go up because I think the matchups will be better.
One of the things that I've noticed this year, and again, this feels more anecdotal than anything else, is that the over-the-top fervor for fantasy football seems to have at least flattened a little bit. Obviously, millions still play and love it, but it hasn't felt like this year in particular. There's so many new people who are getting into fantasy. You then couple that with DraftKings and FanDuel not advertising or not coming close to the advertising budget that they did last year. There's no doubt people still gamble, obviously, and they probably do daily fantasy too, but it just feels anecdotally, John, that the fervor for that is not as big this year as it was last year. And I wonder if you think that's a factor at all, because I do. I think one of the reasons that the primetime games are of interest nationally is because if you have people on your fantasy team Sunday night, Monday night, even if you don't care about those teams, you're still going to watch because you care about your fantasy team. But if fantasy is sort of flattened and daily fantasy is lessened, to me that brings less people into the viewership windows for those primetime games.
Yeah, I haven't seen the numbers for general fantasy, but I absolutely agree. Look, I think it's all the election. But I do believe that daily fantasy in particular, if you look at some of those numbers beyond their advertising base, there are so fewer people playing daily fantasy, there are fewer payouts, and there just isn't, there certainly isn't the fervor that there was around daily fantasy now that people know that, you know, I'm not playing like Joe Schmo from next door. I'm actually playing like an MIT, you know, scientist. I think that certainly has some sort of corollary effect. And to the same extent that this ratings increase that we've seen from the NFL over the past, you know, what, decade has been phenomenal. And I think that's mainly attributable to this, just fantasy football hitting this, like, casual fan, you know, people that aren't really heavy football fans still get into, you know, having a team and doing that. And I think that and NFL executives and media executives feel that that's a major reason why NFL ratings soared over the past decade. So it wouldn't surprise me at all to think that that played some sort of that's some sort of reason for why ratings are falling off a little bit this season.
Jimmy, you're the biggest gambler on this podcast between me, John, and you. What do you? I'm not even saying that to be a wise guy. I mean, you just are. We've all gambled, I think, but I think, I mean, you do it regularly. So have you seen?
I don't take it as an insult.
No, definitely, of course not. We encourage all gamblers to listen to this Sports Illustrated Media podcast. We need you. But do you have you? Because you're closer to this than John and I. Have you seen any kind of? I don't know. Do you still feel like the fervor for gambling for the NFL is as big as it is this year versus last year? Because if you even think anecdotally it's down, that to me means a little less people watching. But maybe that gets into your other thing about quality of play, not as many star quarterbacks, because all that stuff would reduce interest in the league.
Yeah, I don't know how you quantify, you know, your point about, you know, you feel like there's less fantasy players out there. I don't know how you gauge that. And in terms of gambling, I would be willing to bet more people are gambling than ever before on the NFL. So I don't think that's a factor. I think, listen, John's not overstating it. The election was the major factor in all this.
We agree.
But
yeah.
I do think now the NFL's gotten very lucky, because I would love to see what these ratings would be like if the Cowboys were not as good as they are, because that's really where they're getting these boosts from lately. But outside of, you know, the Cowboys and Patriots, you know, how many teams out there do you make sure you go watch every week? You know, I think that's the biggest factor in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, and no doubt that Cam Newton not having as great a year and the Panthers being down, you know, that's somebody who, you know, they understandably MVP of the league. You know, you're going to promote, but if he's not having a good year and that team's not having a good year, that's another sort of star team that's down. And Jimmy, my fantasy stuff is just only anecdotal. I have no data to back it up. It's just more of a feeling that, you know, it's worth me in the next couple of weeks trying to call the Fantasy Sports Trade Association to see if there's any truth to that. But John,
I do think there might be something there with the DraftKings FanDuel stuff, because last year it was 6 hours a day of ads and now there's nothing there. So maybe people are playing that less. But in terms of regular fantasy football, I'd be surprised if it's down.
John,
now, Jimmy, you know, I'm not a big gambler, but like friends of mine who are say they hate to gamble on the NFL because it's the whole any given Sunday. Like, you never have any clue what's going to happen, as opposed to like in college where it seems like it's a lot more sort of set down there. Do you feel that? Is that true?
I do think, and I said this to fellow gamblers throughout the year, it's harder than ever to bet on the NFL because of what's going on with the extra point. They've made that, I mean, it's wacky now. These games, and I feel like this is, it's this way in college too, but for different reasons. But the NFL game now gets completely blown apart when there's a missed extra point, because then you have teams going for two when they shouldn't be going for two. They're chasing points. The number is way off what it should be. So the extra point now has changed. I find it much more difficult when you bet a game, you know, the line's two, the line's three, you sort of think, oh, it's a field goal game, and then boom, these extra points are being missed. Teams are going for two, they're missing. It's weirder and harder to bet the games now than it has been in the past, that's for sure.
That's interesting. This would be so much better, by the way, if we're all in the same studio. So I don't have to go John, Jimmy, John. This is like the A block, B block, C block. Should be much more like inside the NBA if we could just all rap. John,
be professional. You could say someone's name. It's not going to be that big of a deal.
All right. Thank you, Jimmy. John, Richard Sandomir, by the way, who has apparently not retired. This is like the longest goodbye tour. It's like the Who. The guy said
he's writing stories. I know. What's
the guy, the fine sports media writer of the New York Times said he was moving to Obits. Yet it seems like every day the guy has another story in the Times. So like his retirement tour is like the Stones and the Who. But let's assume
sounds like you desperately want him off your beat. So there's less competition for you.
No, again, as I've always said, Sandomir and I do very different things. Sandomir's not the guy's not tweeting out he's not tweeting out a lot of politics or nonsense. All right, anyway, John. Sandomir wrote this piece, which is always of interest to the people who are in sports media, about ESPN's NFL schedule, which for the money they pay is a dog. Let's just be blunt. They pay the NFL nearly $2 million annually. That's nearly twice $1.9 billion Sandomir has here, nearly twice of what any other network TV rights holder throws out. Now, ESPN understandably gets all these highlights, and that sustains so many of the networks, NFL shows, you know, from the NFL Insiders, NFL Live. I mean, you can't even contemplate ESPN without the NFL. I mean, they'd be cooked. That said, John Orand, for that much money, they get no Super Bowl, and they have no flex, and they continue to really get some pretty bad games. Should the NFL give ESPN some kind of inducement to help that schedule, whether it's one flex or whether it's increasing the appearances, let's say, nationally of the Cowboys? Because it seems, I mean, I can't believe, nothing's really unfair in TV, but it does seem like you would want to help a rights holder, even if it's the rights holder that does the hardest journalism of all the TV rights holders.
Yeah, so the contract that ESPN signed for Monday Night Football said that it was essentially going to be the old Sunday Night Football, you know, when that was on ESPN. It's what the NFL considers the cable package, and so it's not going to get as good a game as Sunday Night Football, which then became sort of the marquee package. So the schedule was never going to even come close to Sunday Night Football, because Sunday Night Football was, that was the big event that the NFL wanted to put on broadcast television, and Monday Night Football then became sort of like almost just a cable package. And that made a lot of sense to me until Thursday Night Football comes out. And then you have Thursday Night Football, and you have CBS and NBC spending $450 million on Thursday Night Football. That's a far cry from $2 billion. And the Thursday Night Football schedule is generally not bad. It's pretty good. And in some cases, it's a lot better than ESPN. All that being said, I was at an event at the University of Maryland a couple weeks ago, and John Skipper addressed this. And he said that he doesn't, and I think I kind of believe him, maybe not, I'm sure you won't, but he said he doesn't really care about Monday Night Football ratings at all, or certainly not as much as the broadcast networks, because of what you said. And that $2 billion that they spend, so much of it goes to the studio programming. And if you turn on the ESPN right now, they have a studio football show on one of their four networks. And go online, and they have the NFL, and they have some of the highlights up there. They get so much out of it that Fox can't do, that certainly NBC can't do on their cable networks. And it just provides almost 24 hours of programming during the season on the network. So it's really hard to take a look at $2 billion and just say $2 billion for that, because I haven't actually seen this quantified. I think that'd be a good story. I don't know how much of the $2 billion it goes to the highlight rights, but those highlight rights are worth a pretty penny, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't believe John Skipper, by the way. No disrespect to him. I think he absolutely cares about Monday. I mean,
I'm just saying what he said. All I said is what he said.
Yeah, of course he cares. It's his most important property. Jimmy, what about, you know, you, I don't know if you read Sandomir's story, but, you know, you follow the NFL, and you have for decades, and you see the Monday Night Football schedule, and let's be honest, compared to the others, it's a dog. And yeah, they pay so much money for that. I mean, I know the NFL loves Dick Ebersol, and you know, they love NBC more than anything, but can we get a little help for ESPN here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a big deal. They've made the Sunday night package the number one package. Listen, you can't, if you're going to help ESPN on Monday night too, then you're going to end up pissing off CBS and Fox, because they still need good games. They already got the marquee game on Sunday night. They're putting, Thursday night, every Thursday night game is a divisional matchup. Whether they're good or not, that's another story. But they're trying to help it be good by making it a divisional. It's usually a divisional matchup every week. I know this week is Cowboys and Vikings, which isn't the division. But every other game, I think, has been a divisional matchup. So then you're going to put two good teams on ESPN. What's left for NBC for Fox and CBS on Sunday afternoons? To me, you still need good games there.
Jimmy, I love the fact you're still working for Fox, Jimmy. Jimmy, Thursday Night Football. Saw a report, I think it was through Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, the NFL contemplating maybe ending in Thursday Night Football or changing. I don't believe for a second the NFL is eliminating any primetime package. Roger Goodell said, when he said a couple of years ago, the goal was to get to whatever, $25 billion. The NFL knows full well the way that they can get big money is through TV rights holders or some kind of digital rights holder. they're not stopping, in my opinion, Thursday Night Football, even though I don't think Thursday Night Football is good for the game, and it's certainly not good for the players and the players' health. Do you buy that at all, the idea that somehow the NFL is going to stop Thursday Night Football?
No, and they already refuted the report and said it's not true. And they're not walking away from that money that CBS and NBC are paying them. All Roger Goodell cares about is money. So they're not going to leave that money on the table. So I don't believe it for one second. They already said the report's not true.
All right, there you go. John Orand.
Yeah, let me defend Florio for a second.
All right, go ahead.
That dude is plugged in, and I'm certain that his report was true. And I think that the NFL, I think that this ratings decline has really freaked out the NFL. And I think that the NFL is, you know, they have said everything's on the table. And I bet you that was something that was on the table. But they're certainly not getting rid of it, because if they get rid of it, they're almost going to have to get rid of NFL Network. Or certainly they'll suddenly have to lose a lot more money on NFL Network, because cable operators pay NFL Network based on the live games.
Absolutely.
But also, I mean, you try to convince NFL owners to give up, you know, $450 million for a package that they just sort of invented. I mean, I just don't see that happening.
Same here. No chance.
Can I ask you guys one quick ratings question that you know the answer to better than me?
Right.
With the Rams going from St. Louis to L.A., which was L.A. the number two TV market, I get the impression that outside of maybe four people in L.A., there's not one person in America who cares about the Rams being in L.A., but has that helped at all this year? Are the Rams ratings in L.A. up from the Rams ratings in St. Louis? All that stuff can move the Rams to L.A. because of the number two TV market. And, nobody cares about the Rams. Well, is there any point to that? Has that helped?
John, you can take that.
Yeah, I haven't checked in on that since early in the season. And it would be shocking if they... So the way the ratings work is St. Louis certainly is going to have a bigger rating, but even with a smaller rating, Los Angeles could have a bigger audience. But I think that the NFL was worried about that, because if you lived in LA for gamblers and for football fans was a nirvana, because you had, every single game was on pretty much, all the national games, and there weren't any blackouts. And then all of a sudden they put the Rams in there, and now you got to watch. You had to watch a Rams game instead of the Cowboys Steelers, potentially. So they relaxed a lot of those blackout rules, and they allowed the local affiliates to carry games that they wouldn't have normally carried to try to mitigate that. But I don't have the hard numbers in front of me. I haven't looked into that in several weeks.
Yeah, it's a good story to look into, Jimmy, because obviously the audience in St. Louis is furious at the NFL, and I'd be curious to see how that has impacted viewership numbers in St. Louis, depending on what games they get. And again, I don't know the hard numbers either, but I don't get the... I mean, maybe part of it is because the Rams are not a good team, but I don't get the sense somehow that the Rams have become this sort of mega television market for its home team. But maybe John will look into that, or Austin Carr at... the former Notre Dame star in the 70s. Austin Carp can look into that from Sports Business Daily and get back to us. John, let us go to you, though, because no one loves stories about cable coverage more than you and sports TV ratings. And the fine folks at that most excellent website have been doing great work in terms of letting us know what Nielsen's cable coverage is for the sports networks. And so we have seen a decline of households for essentially almost all the sports networks. Golf Channel is up. But the one that's going to get obviously the most attention is ESPN and ESPN2, and rightly so, just given how big they are. And so, John, in a piece that came out a couple days ago, Sports TV Ratings doing a great job here of letting us know what the estimated households are for ESPN in December, which is 88.4 million. That is down more than almost close to 1.5 million from September. ESPN2, same thing, down nearly 1.5 million households since September. NBC Sports Network down 1.3 million since September. NBA Television down 1.7. MLB down 1.6. Fox Sports 1 down almost 600,000. Fox Sports 2 down why would anybody watch Fox Sports 2, by the way? Down 1.5 million. So, John, these are unbelievable numbers, but let's stick with ESPN first. This is a big topic in the sports media circles. What does this mean to you? Is it a trend that is going to continue month after month after month? How alarmed should we be? Or is this, if you want to buy the ESPN sort of spin, older people dying, natural course of things, that cable's going to go down, our business is still incredible, nothing to see here?
This is a story that has been happening for several years, and there's no way to sugarcoat it. And like the cable video industry or satellite, that's all of pay TV actually, is declining, and it's contracting. It became mature, and now it's sort of coming back, and everybody's sort of waiting to see where it nets out to. So it's interesting because like ESPN's gone from 100 million to 88 million, according to Nielsen. But yeah, they still, even with that huge drop over, and that drop is over, I think, three or four years, you know, they still have been the top-rated primetime network. You know, so they still are getting the viewers, which suggests, like, who's dropping off? Maybe the people that are dropping off are the people that don't want to pay for ESPN when they don't watch ESPN. So in terms of actual viewership and ad sales, you know, that's still doing okay. But one thing to look at is, this is a bad news story for all the cable networks. I'm not trying to sugarcoat that. But one way to look at it is ESPN and Fox and NBC and CBS as well. You know, look at what they're doing. They're doing these deals with DirecTV Now. You know what we've got. I feel like I'm getting like really in the weeds, but an over the top provider. You know, it's an OTT provider that streams these networks. You know, it's been doing a lot of deals. Did a deal with Hulu to get on. ESPN did. So it's trying to, you know, you can watch ESPN via Xbox now. And interesting, those Nielsen numbers don't include those subscribers, even though I think that maybe a million to total. I mean, it's not necessarily big.
Right.
But what everybody's trying to do is figure out how to get those viewers that have been dropping off. And one of the biggest story that you and I can be covering for the next several years, Artie, is sort of what they're doing to get it and whether they're going to be there or not. I mean, take a look at what ESPN did. It bought a huge percentage of BAM Tech, you know, Major League Baseball Advanced Media. That's a pure streaming site, and it's just going to be, you know, put it on steroids to get it out there. So the way that we watch TV is going to right now and even growing up, it's going to be reminiscent to everybody sitting around the one black and white TV from the 1950s pretty soon. So it's changing, and the question is which networks are set up to adapt to that change in the best way.
Yeah, and I think the thing about ESPN, and I think it will be in a good position because I think it will invest in the right things to be able to distribute where the people are going to be watching in the future. You mentioned BAM. You know, the big question is, whatever their number is now, John, I agree with you. It's not going to be the number 10 years from now. The interesting question to me is, what will cable be, if it's anything, in 10 years? And could it be a place where 35 million people pay $30 a month to watch ESPN? Which I could see. I think there is a possibility of that. Could it be 10 million? Well, and ESPN's in big trouble if it's that. Will it be zero? No way. I cannot see. The people who project somehow that cable is done in 10 or 15 years, no way. It's seemingly inconceivable to me given how quickly such an industry would be eliminated. But you hit on all the topics. Jimmy?
Well, let me also just jump in, too. You know, DirecTV just announced this week that they're doing an OTT service, you know, DirecTV Now. That service has no DVR. You know, you're not able to watch the NFL on your phone at all. It doesn't have any local station in there. I mean, they're asking you to pay for something that is a much worse service than cable. But yeah, it's cheaper too. I mean, the OTT business is not mature. Well, it's not even close to being mature, obviously, but it's not there yet, and it might not get there.
Yeah, it's interesting. Jimmy, I know this is John's expertise, so I gave him a little bit more time. I do want you to weigh in.
I actually hate this topic because it makes me feel very old. I don't know people getting rid of cable, but clearly there are people getting rid of cable.
Right. Well, Jimmy, hold on.
The numbers are amazing.
Jimmy, hold on 1 second, because this is interesting. You can sort of weigh in on this because you're on Twitter all the time and stuff, and John knows this too. And the sports TV ratings guys are also all over this. The numbers for Twitter so far for the NFL experiment are nothing. I think it's successful in terms of a production. It looks great on the screen and it's cool to watch. But the idea somehow that 20 million, 5 million, 10 million people were going to go to Twitter to watch a football game did not exist. Yahoo played around a little bit fast and loose with its numbers on the Jacksonville game for London. So John, I think, makes a great point in that these services are ramping up, but the majority of people are not watching games streamed or digitally at all. It is still far and away television, linear, or cable.
Well, on top of that, too, if you take a look at, like, sorry to jump in on your question, Jimmy, but this stuff excites me. I'm a nerd. If you take a look at Twitter's numbers, they're less than the streams. So people are still watching the streams, but they're watching the streams from these TV brands. So they're watching the NFL, the NBC Sunday Night Football stream,
right,
more than they're watching Twitter, or they're watching the ESPN Monday Night Football stream more than they're watching Twitter. It's fascinating, actually, because Twitter, you can just click on one button. It's so easy to see, but people just haven't been doing that yet.
Jimmy?
No, I never understood that Twitter deal agreement. I never understood who is the audience for that, because
people who are cord cutters, you know, people who don't have cable.
Right, but if you're a cord cutter and you don't have cable, are you that big of an NFL fan where you're going to go out of your way to watch a game on Twitter?
It's a good question. Really good question.
That never made sense to me. Plus, the Thursday night game, I think all but two, if I'm not mistaken, have been on network TV. They're on CBS or NBC. So if you are a cord cutter, though, you're going to watch the game on, you know, whatever device you're using and put on CBS or NBC. Well, I don't understand why you'd use Twitter. I never knew who that was supposed to be for.
About Twitter is they're spending like $1 million a game. Believe it or not, $1 million is like chump change.
Right.
So it's basically like it's just a test, and the NFL is testing to see like when the rights come up, and if all of a sudden ESPN is bidding on NFL rights with only 70 million subscribers, you know, will they be able to afford $2 billion again, or do they need to try to gin up some interest from the Amazons and the Twitters and the Facebooks to say, hey, there's a package here for you, too, if you want to pay for it. So everybody's just sort of testing this out. It's less about the actual audience, I think.
Yeah, that's basically $1 million is a rounding error for Twitter. John, at this point of the podcast, would you like to say something nice about Jamie Horowitz or any other media executive that I can help you out with some stories down the road?
Well, I'm speechless now, Richard. That was good.
That was good.
Good. Yeah, I think Jamie does a great job, and you know, I think he can wrap a nice press release over my way before it gets the full distribution. Absolutely.
Nice. Good use of the word the wrap. Jimmy, is there anybody you want to give a shout out to as we go to some lightning topics after this?
How about I give myself a shout out, because on the last podcast you asked the biggest story of 2017, and I said Simmons, and then the next day his show was canceled. So
that was a
shout out for me.
All right, Jimmy, good segue then, leading to what's next now, in your opinion, for Bill Simmons. I'll give you my quick thing, which I've written. People who follow me sort of know this. I think he's clearly retrenching back into The Ringer. I think he'll obviously retrench back into his podcast network, try to develop some more of those. I think you'll see him do a documentary or two with HBO. But I would expect him to really focus hard on The Ringer, whether that's through his own writing or through more talent acquisition. I think that site has a lot of talent, but I don't think it's gotten the kind of cultural buzz or close to it that Grantland did. So that would be my thought for him. Will he ever go back into television? I think if you sort of say never, say never. I mean, first of all, Bill Simmons is very close with John's best friend, Jamie Horowitz. So who knows if Bill would ever end up at FS1. But I think he's going to sort of step away from TV for a little bit. What about you, Jimmy? Because you did, in fact, make the call the day before it happened.
You know, it's interesting because the one thing that sort of came out of that for me is just how much people... I mean, the narrative was just strictly Bill Simmons is not for TV. It really kept snowballing, snowballing, and everything I read from people was you know, he's not a TV guy. He has no presence for TV. I don't know if I buy that. I think, you know, you cannot be a TV person and still have something to offer on TV. Maybe
definitely.
Our show is not the thing, but what he
just so I think he needs. I think we all agreed. I think Bill just needs a co-host or someone else to play off of, and I think the whole show is at least that's my take. The whole show is different then. Jimmy, keep going. I'm sorry.
I mean, I find it hard to believe that he can't do a segment on, you know, maybe he goes to TNT since he's such an NBA fanatic, and I don't know, put him on with those guys for 10 minutes a week, or put him on an NFL pregame show for 10 minutes a week. I mean, I was surprised at the backlash. I mean, people seem happy that this happened to him, which I thought was interesting.
Jimmy, I didn't mean to interrupt. This is where I wish we were all around the table here, because then you could see me talking. There's a lot of schadenfreude with Simmons. A lot of it is probably jealousy, and there's other parts of it that people just don't like him, and they see his as arrogant. But you know, there's a group of writers out there. A lot of them worked for Gawker and some other places who really dislike Simmons, and I think would probably you can maybe even say actively and publicly rooting against him. And maybe that's also part of just human nature, is that when you have somebody that famous making that much money in the sports space, who also, and this is fair, has said that, you know, was pretty public about being critical of other people on TV and saying that TV's not that tough. Certainly you can understand the schadenfreude from some ESPNers who liked seeing Bill's show get canceled.
I'll give you that last point. That last point is obviously fair. I do think, though, I think a lot of people in this business, not TV people, but I guess web people, I don't know, I sort of think there should be some level of respect there for Bill, because these websites wouldn't even be around probably if it wasn't for Bill. So, but TV is a different world. And yeah, I mean, if he thought TV was going to be easy, then I could see where you're coming from there. But I just thought the backlash was way harsher than I thought for a guy who, listen, I have one negative thing about Bill, one knock on Bill. The Boston stuff, if you're not from Boston, it gets very hard to take. I didn't watch his show because the first week I saw the Ben Affleck clip and said, I'm not watching the show because I could see he's going to be with the Patriots every week.
Right.
And I think if you're doing TV, you've got to expand. And not, I mean, I would be, I didn't see the show, so I'm not going to comment, but I'm sure he talked about Boston stuff every single week. Yeah, that works in a web column where people can just keep scrolling and go past to the next topic. But on TV, people are just going to change the channel. So I do think Bill needs to get out of the Boston bubble. But outside of that, I mean, I didn't realize this was a guy that would generate so much backlash. It was very surprising to me.
John, you want to weigh in on that very quickly?
Yeah, the only thing you didn't mention is this podcast, which in terms of retrenching, which I agree with everything you said, Artie. And I think that, you know, the Ringer, and I think also the podcast, I think he's going to try to blow that out and his whole podcast network, which I haven't seen any numbers, but it seems to have a ton of advertising.
All right. It looks like, I mean, Toby, we got 5 minutes left today because of some studio issues. Terrible job by digital media today. Totally putting the screws to me. And I blame... do I blame Lou Pellegrino for this, or do I blame John McDermott? I'll figure out who to blame.
By the way, Sports Business Journal, big story on digital media, where I referenced Richard Deitch in the story.
I appreciate that. In all seriousness, digital media guys have been great, although today I'm going to obviously be pissed at them because they've clearly chosen another podcast over mine in terms of popularity. All right, very quickly, John, UFC wants, this is your story, $450 million a year in media rights fees. That'd be triple what Fox pays or is paying them in 2016. One, will they get it? Two, who are they going to?
My guess is that they're not going to see $450 million. I think that's an outlandish number. I don't think that NBC is that interested. I don't think CBS is not interested. Turner's a bit of a wild card. ESPN will kick the tires, but everything we said about ESPN earlier suggests that they're not ready to write a really big check for the UFC. So my guess is it's going to go back to Fox, but not quite at $450 million.
Jimmy Traina, Big Ten games on Friday night. Is this a good or bad idea?
I would say bad idea.
Maybe a why here or no?
People don't watch TV on Friday night. ABC's done a nice job with the Saturday night. I don't think that's going to work on Friday night.
Jimmy, do you want to get into your thoughts and theories on sports media people or places buying fake followers to push up their follower count?
I know you do.
I think it's an interesting topic, but I don't want to put you in any kind of jackpot because I think you might have some interesting insight here.
Listen, I think there are people and companies that buy followers, and I mean, it doesn't bother me. I'm sure it would bother you because you're obsessed with every number of it.
That is not true.
Oh, yeah. But you know, listen, it's up to it's like the election that we just had. People have to be smarter and people have to see through the bullshit and get to the truth. And when you see something that has a number that is, you know, 100,000 more than it was 2 days ago, use your brain.
Good, very good point. John Orand, a guy who I know has bought followers. John Orand, how does NASCAR, this is a question we got, stop the bleeding and bring life back into television viewership?
I think it needs to be patient. I mean, they've done so many changes over the years. They went through a new broadcaster with NBC. It takes viewers a while to find it. Plus, I think that if you step back, TV numbers are bad, but if you step back, NASCAR still brings in a really good, big audience. That's nothing to sneeze at. It's down from what it was. But it's still a credible big audience. It's an audience NBA regular season game or, you know, baseball. They would love to have NASCAR's audience. So I think that's, you know, it's a bad narrative. It's a bad story for them. But I think that they just need to be patient because they still have a lot of support there.
All right, final two. By the way, I'll just do a quick aside that I'm very high on Bill Hoffmeimer. He helped me out this week, so... a longtime rival of ESPN PR. We're in a good place right now. David Scott's still a guy who is I will never talk to again on ESPN PR. But right now, Orand, McNanulu, Krulowitz, LaPlaca, Soltis, Carey Potts, Gracie Blackburn, and J.J. Neshem. I'm in a good place with ESPN PR, John. I know you'd be proud of me for that.
All right. Well, you know what? Hoffmeimer is like the happiest person on earth, so I'd be surprised if you ever had any problems.
I know. Everything's great, and Adnan Virk is the greatest ever, and Kirk Herbstreit's the greatest ever, and no one's more handsomer than Danny Cannell. All right, Jimmy, quickly, as we roll up here, Barstool Sports, will they get a television deal? Their podcasts are number one, very hot brand right now. Their loyalty is incredible, in my opinion. Will they eventually land some kind of TV show?
Absolutely.
Where?
I mean, I would have no way of knowing that, but they will land on, I'm sure, a cable network. I would hope for them cable because then, you know, obviously you can do more on cable than you can on network TV. But they'll definitely get a TV deal. There's no doubt about it.
All right, 30 seconds, John. Give me a quick prediction that's going to happen in the next month in sports media. And then, Jimmy, same for you, and then we're out.
Wow, within the next month. The next Nielsen report is going to show further subscriber losses for ESPN.
Okay, Jimmy?
A media prediction that's going to happen in the next month?
Yes, Jimmy. Come on. Be prepared for this podcast.
I mean, it's just such a lame question.
Everybody's a critic. You're like Dan Le Batard killing me here. All right, go ahead, Jimmy, quickly.
What did Dan Le Batard kill you about, anyway?
It seemed upset
that's
about me. It seemed upset about me calling Ernie Johnson and getting his opinion on stuff and... Who knows? Depends on the week.
That's a great story. See, that's what you should be talking about here.
We'll do it on the next podcast.
They care about a Richard Deitch, Dan Le Batard feud.
No, we'll do it on the next podcast. All right, Jimmy.
Did he ask you to go on his radio show?
No. Jimmy, we need... Jimmy, literally, we got 30 seconds.
By the way, Jimmy's running out the clock. This is excellent.
Jimmy, this is like... Seriously, Jimmy. There's just no respect for this podcast.
Story. I don't have a media story in the next month. What's going on? The NFL playoffs... college football.
Jimmy, you work for Awful Announcing in the comeback. This is your beat.
I'll tell you, on December 15th, which is what, 2 weeks from now?
Right.
That begins the one-year march. From December 15th, there will be 1 year left that Mike Francesa will be at WFAN. And while it's a New York deal, I do think it will be fascinating to see 1 year from now on December 15th, 2017, who is in the 1 to 6:30 slot on the most popular sports radio station in the country.
All right, I like that. That's interesting. And ESPN Radio, certainly from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. or 5 p.m. is just no relevance in New York. Outside of Michael Kay and Don LaGreca, who I like.
And we'll do when Francesa leaves in a year from now, Richard.
Say that again, Jimmy.
Mike's last date on SAN is December 15, 2017. Do you have a prediction on what SAN will do with that time slot?
I don't have a prediction yet, but I will think about it. I think it will be someone who has been on The Fan before. That's my only prediction. Like a Chris Carlin type, or someone like that. I think it's going to be a known person. They won't do the Chris Christie move there. It'll be a known fan entity. All right, listen, I apologize because I have been It's my fault for rushing everybody because we have to we got another podcast that we're taping here. So I apologize to the audience as well. I mean, to not get more of John Oran and Jimmy Traina is, I think, heresy, and it's unfair on my part. So we're going to bring you two back, you two knuckleheads back a month from now to talk about some other stuff. By the way, the last podcast, like, closing in on, like, 25,000 downloads. It's insane. You're more popular than I ever expected. I'm not going to lie. All right, listen. Well,
when you tweet the link 25,000 times on Twitter, I would hope you'd get one.
Yeah, and your landlord should thank me for that, Jimmy. All right, listen, the guests have been John Oran of the Sports Business Daily and Jimmy Traina of Awful Announcing and The Comeback. This is the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast Roundtable. We will bring these guys back a month from now. John and Jimmy, thank you very much, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
All right, back in studio after the podcast, my thanks to Jimmy Traina and John Oran. I'm with Lou Pellegrino. Lou, you're, as a member of, a high-ranking member, by the way, of digital media.
I use that term loosely.
You need to explain to me why everything in the studio, I'm being rushed. I'm being told there's more important people who are taping today, so let's roll this thing up at 45 minutes. Can you give the listeners just a sense of the franticness, what is going on in the studio as you are trying to kick Jimmy Traina and John Oran off the air?
As you know, this is a multiple production facility, if you want to call it that. There's more than one show that is based out of here. And today just happened to be one of those mishmash days where we had to play a little bit of Tetris by trying to schedule interview, phone interview, in-studio interview, phone interview. And sometimes what happens there is there's a logjam with the phone lines. And unfortunately, today we had that logjam with the phone lines. But no one is of the wiser. We have all the proper interviews done. Jimmy and John were very entertaining.
By the way, Lou, doesn't this just prove once again that there's a pecking order when it comes to the, I mean, Woj clearly is he's the bell of the ball for digital media. I understand that. But there's clearly there is clearly a pecking order, is there not? And I think today
everybody gets their own dance. Everybody gets their own spotlight.
Peter
dance.
King is another guy who you guys treat like you know, the way Trump and Romney were treated at John George. So it's very clear that where I now stand on the pecking order, which at least now is transparent. I appreciate
well,
it.
Well, here's what we'll do, okay?
Go ahead.
You have two people who dine at John George.
Right.
And then there's your show. And your guests today were the perfect name, Jimmy John's.
I like their subs.
I like Jimmy John's subs. Yeah, absolutely. That's no knock on Jimmy John's.
When I lived
Jimmy
in
John's
Ann Arbor, I went to Jimmy John's often, all right, on the right across from campus. All right, Lou. I'm done interrogating you about this studio situation.
That's okay. Hey, listen, we got all the work done, and congratulations on over 20,000 with the last time Jimmy and John.
I mean,
John
I've had many.
On.
Let's not go crazy. I've had a lot bigger podcast. I just wanted to give those guys a little insight.
And they love giving it right back to you too.
They do. All right. So my thanks in all seriousness to Lou Pellegrino. Sean Cherry came in before another member of digital media to really help us out because we had some phone line issues early. So I appreciate his work as well. Thanks to all the people back at Sports Illustrated who support this podcast, including Chris Stone and John Wertheim and Ben Eagle. My thanks again to Jimmy Traina and John Oran. Please listen to some previous podcasts that we've done. Last couple include Paul Feinbaum, who I thought was really, really interesting, and Pat Hughes and Gary Cohn. I know Lou was part of that. He liked that one. Those are the Mets broadcaster and the Cubs broadcaster, both guys up for the Ford Frick Award and two of the best baseball broadcasters going today. So those are the last ones we've done. Please check those out. All right, for Lou Pellegrino, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.